that we shouldn't be interested in buying. He said, I'll drink all the oil to get out of that well. And so he said, well, you can go ahead and buy it then, you and Charles. He said, I said, well, we are employed. We're not going to work at it. Well, if you want to, I said, well, we will pull the oil. We need the oil anyway. And your crew, they had their own pulling outfit and crew, and then also the pumpers, well, pumpers. I said, we'll pay whatever reasonable fee is expected, and we'll have nothing to do with the actual, only the administration of it, and we'll pay you for that. Well, that was pleasing to him, so it worked out all right. So then, after we had that well a while, we came out of the money and bought the one from Art Delaney, as I'm talking about, on 36 New Atlantic, and then later, the first one we put on got a hole in the casing, and the sand was drifting in. It just, in those days, we were getting 91 cents for 21 gravity, and I think 96 cents for 22 gravity, and it didn't warrant our continuing to producing it. So we abandoned that well and then later sold the one up on 36. I forgot to, can't name the people we sold it to, but anyway. And so we didn't have any more production ourselves. We had reinvested some of the money in various little things and some real estate around. Eventually we divided the partnership when I left Century and he stayed with them. And later on then, with Mr. Colvin, you asked me about, let's see, what did I first do with them? Oh, he and Bud Delaney, AJ's son, bought the remaining assets of Delaney Petroleum Corporation. I forget what year it was. So sometime after that, they wanted to drill a grassroot well up on it's now in the Shell sector up there. The Christ release, and I raised the money to pay for half of the drilling. The person I raised the money from put up and received 50% of the working interest, and I received 2% override.
That's the one you still
have. Huh?
Is that the one you still have the 2% override?
Yes. And so that was my first venture with him. And also, same fellow went in with some drilling they did over in Wilmington. And so we eventually sold our operating interest to Shell some years back, 10 or 12 years ago to Shell. But they kept it 2% override. And then, then as the deal came up, and Rocky German, he was a very well-known producer and explorationist on Signal Hill, never had a lot of money, but he was the discoverer of the, what we call it, the soda zone on Signal Hill. And I remember that at a meeting of the Oilfield Service Association, up until some years ago, I forget now how long, 5, 6, 7 years ago, they had been organized in about 1932, a monthly service club called the Oilfield Service Association. You probably heard of it. And We met once a month, and that was composed of all kinds of people in all places of business. I was a member of it, and what point was I trying to make?
Is that how you found another oil well to invest in?
Yes. Oh, yes. And so Rocky German, about 1937-38, no, the point I was trying to make was we used to meet at various restaurants. Jack Silver's place was then on Willow, or that mobile station, Wardlow and Cherry, southwest corner, a very popular restaurant. They had a private meeting room, and we met there for a while, various places, and the Hilltop, we met there quite a number of years, and then later there was a place on Cherry, a steakhouse there south of Spring Street on the west side. I don't recall the name of it. In the last struggling years of its existence, was at that place, I believe. It finally had a demise or a death. There just wasn't enough interest left at the time. But at one of those meetings, down at Jack Silver's, I remember, a geologist, a very well-known one at the time, the name of Al Carey, and he's still living, he's living up at Gilroy now.
Well-known for his profile.
Yeah. Oh, you, I did write one on him, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yes. And he was the speaker of the evening. He'd always have a movie or a speaker or something, of course. And he said, and he was talking about the structures on Signal Hill, and one of his conclusions was, in terminating his talk, he says, you know, somebody with enough guts and the money to do it, he said, will drill down below 9,000 feet, 9 to 10,000 feet, they're going to find another zone down there in this structure. Well, this fellow Rocky German did just that. He didn't have the money to drill. Even in those days, that was kind of deep and expensive to drill through. But he raised the money and the supplies by barter, mostly. He had to raise money for cash money for payroll. Had to pay the men in cash, but at about 1938, we were still in the latter part of the Depression. And then most of the material, like the derrick, the lumber for the derrick, and all the equipment and everything, he bartered either for the rental of it or the purchase of it. And even down to the lubricating oil that oil wells have to have, lubricating oils and greases to run it. And my partner, Mr. Cox, who I was still in with at Century, we furnished that for a quarter of 1%. I think they were selling the 1/4% barter or cash for $3,000. And of course, he needed that because it was expensive to drill even then. So he finally wired that well down and got down to almost 10,000 feet. I think the bottom was about 10. And he got a well that produced it initially about 240 barrels a day. But he never did, the way I remember it, go or get out of oil-bearing formation. He just ran out of capacity and money to go any further. So he continued it down there. And that was a discovery. They called it the DeSoto Oil Company because of the DeSoto Zone, because that was the company he drilled a well under, DeSoto. They call it the DeSoto Zone today. And He later moved up on 25th, about Gaviota, the north side of 25th Street, I think just about opposite Gaviota, dead ends in there. He drove another one. It went just a little bit deeper. He got penetrated about 10, I think the bottom of that's 10,400 and some odd. And he got a 450 barrel well there. And it was higher gravity. It was 30-31 gravity oil. So we followed him in on that on the same deal. And then years later, that was a long life well. Both of them were. It's a very tight zone, very low porosity and permeability, and doesn't give up oil. In fact, when I saw the core, I didn't see I was going to get any oil out. It didn't look like oil sand to me. But it did have a roll over, and because he ran a coal barrel. I mean, he took formation cores right out there, and it didn't look good to me when he brought the car out, but it was. But not highly prolific. So those wells paid out fine, but in later years, after all those years up until 1958, the well was still doing about 55 barrels a day, the second one. The other one about 23, 24 barrels a day. But he had a disastrous fishing job there, and he lost the well, jumped the hole down at the bottom, and so in an effort to salvage it, he came up the hole and perforated some zones he had showing up on the electric log. By that time, we had electric logs, and that was unsuccessful, and he fooled around for a while, for a long time, and finally lost it. And to pay all the bills he incurred in saving the well, he had to sell the other well. So that's the next deal I entered into with Bud Delaney and Charlie Colvin, and we three bought it from him. And a little later, Bud wanted out, and so Charlie and I bought him out, so the two of us owned it together for a number of years. And then we had a very expensive pulling job there. It seemed so at the time to us, although Charlie was much more capable financially than I was. He had done extremely well, but after we paid our bills, I think that pulling job in those days was quite, we thought it was a lot of money, close to $10,000 time we paid all the bills. We didn't have quite that much. We had the dick in our pockets for it, pay all the bills. We got it back on all right, and it was doing about what it did before, 2-3 bills more. But Charlie had more foresight than I did, and more background experience in downhole matters than I had. And he remarked one day that we'd ought to sell the well, that he'd had somebody pussyfooting around saying they'd maybe like to buy it. And I said, why do you think we ought to sell it? It's doing all right now. I needed the monthly income. It was just a nice beginning of a little more income. And that kind of income was good. Well, we said, we could have a real disaster with this well. We just lose all our capital investment. And Well, I really didn't want to sell, but I pondered over it and finally decided, I just better take his advice. In fact, I was going out and get another buyer for his half and maybe operate with someone else, but I reconsidered and decided it'd be better to go ahead and sell out and do something else because of the hazard of pumping a deep well like that and the potential for disaster downhole. So we sold out to Davis Investment Company. And sure enough, his prognosis was right. About, well, they didn't have it 6 or 8 months until they had a downhole disaster. And so I had to give him credit for his sensible observation on things. How did they did overcome it? It sat idle for about 1.5, 2 years. And finally, young Bob Davis, who succeeded his deceased father in the company, finally got back on production. It's producing down there now. I don't know exactly how much, but I think it's a good commercial wow. But for us, not necessarily my partner, because as I say, he could have sustained it better, lost better than I could. But I have him to thank for maybe saving me a big king-size headache. And that was, I think that was about the last thing I did with them. They finally dissolved the Delaney Petroleum Corporation, and Bud Delaney's a deceased person now, about 2 or 3 years ago. Charlie died about 6 or 7, 8 years ago. Of course, we jointly bought the property on top of Signal Hill there. He had the deal and invited me into that deal. And so I have him to thank for that, too. But Delaney girls are still around. Norma runs the Long Beach Hardware store. You know her?
No, but somebody told me that was one of Delaney's daughters.
Yeah, Norma. Pat and Doris. Pat is married to Wes Horton. They live up on top Signal Hill there in the condominium that he and his associates built there. They live in one of those. And of course they're also Wes was a banker, really. He was associated with Gus Walker and the F&M Bank out at Garden Grove. He was in charge out there until, not until recently, I think he was still consulting 2 or 3 days a week, but I think he has withdrawn and tired from that now. Gus Walker's son, Dick, was been in and out of the oil business rather successfully. He's one of Dick's boys. You know, they used to have a family polo team. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Gus used to play on it. He and the boys, they composed a full team. A five, isn't it, on a... I think it's five on a polo team.
Where do they play?
Frankly, I don't know. I never had much interest in the game. But I think there are places around here where they must have played. Maybe out on the Bixby Ranch, or I don't know. Because Fred Bixby was quite a fancier of animals, you know. He had those big Clydesdale horses, and what do you know all about that?
Well, just that he had horses, that's
yeah.
That's what kind of work was it?
They were Clydesdales, those fancy workhorses that pull the brewery wagons. You see the pictures. Fred was quite a character.
Did you know him?
Yes. Not deeply, but I had occasion to meet him and visit him once in a while. On occasion when we were looking for oil, I would dig pretty deep and try to buy royalty oil from people that owned the land that had the prerogative of taking the oil in kind and selling it directly to a purchaser. I never was successful with him, but because that was the Almy's Land Company and Dixby's, and I had considerable landowner share up there at the time. But actually, I used to enjoy going out and seeing him, though, because he was quite fond of showing off his livestock and his horses, and he raised the thoroughbreds too. And he was many times, I think he was headed up the Cattlemen's Association in California. You know all that from your research on the farming.
Yeah. But is that common for landowners to be able to sell part of their oil?
Well, in many leases, those provisions you'll find in some oil leases. I'm a lessor, I own the land, I lease it to you for drilling, and I say, well, if I think of it, a lot of landowners didn't care whether they had it or not. But if they happened to think of it, they didn't shape that as a requirement of the lease, that they would have the option to take the oil in kind and designate who to deliver it to, and who had the right to take it from the lease for their account. Yes. It's still in most leases, of course, the U.S. government does that. USGS, U.S. Geological Survey, are still doing that, because I recall having been with several independent companies getting our share of the crude and joint meetings with the USGS, and it was always quite a squabble. But independent refiners had a prerogative, a right to have first call on those royalties. And so for Century, and then also for the account for the other two companies I worked for, Golden Eagle and Carson, I bought quite a bit of oil down through the years when we needed it bad enough, and they would generally, those of the independent refiners that were interested would, rather than do it loose jointed, that we just had one big, or maybe a half a dozen big meetings, and we'd each make our request, and then the local administrator of USGS would, under the rulings and the qualifications for it, would bill it out, and we'd have to kind of give and take a little, but eventually we'd iron it out and get maybe what we wanted. But then you had to very often make, you know, arrangements for exchanges. If I was buying oil in Ventura or Kettleman Hills or Buena Vista, like I did once in Kettleman Hills, and no, Elk Hills, Kettleman Hills, no, but Elk Hills and Buena Vista Hills and various other leases around out of our area that we're operating here, where both refineries are in this LA area, and get exchanges on with various companies that had facilities and who would exchange it. But there's, it helped us at times to get another 500,000 barrels a day of crude into a little refinery. It was a It was an aid and supply.
When you were talking about the well on which you had the 2% override, you said it was a grassroots well?
Yes.
What does that mean?
That means it was a new well. It was drilled from the grassroots. If you re-drill a well, you go into an old hole and maybe rip stock out the casing and make new hole in the zone or go deeper. But this was in an old field where it had been explored, and yet they felt it was a good spot to drill a well. And that was about 1955, you see, many, many years after all of that had been explored. But they made a nice little well there. My friend that went in it was quite pleased with it. Charlie and I finally bought him out. I don't know why he wanted to sell out. I think he just so short of money. He was building a company, a sales company, a very successful company. He's a multimillionaire, but he wanted to sell out, and Charlie and I bought his share of that well, which I owned up until the time he sold out to Shell Oil Company. Pretty good little well. Not big, but steady and clean. We didn't have hardly a tea kettle for the water to produce. And if I had a good primary allocation in the flood, still get primary royalties there.
The thing that I mentioned when we talked the last time is that maybe you could talk about how the oil well spread out over Signal Hill. I know where the discovery well was, but where did the exploration carry?
Of course, I was just a young fellow driving a truck on Signal Hill in those early days. And I led a Model T Ford making sales around the hill. Well, let's start from Temple Avenue, where the river well was. A little after that, the land that Moses Calvin and I still own there, the Superior Oil Company, the Keck family, leased that and drilled two wells there and discovered the same zone. And so Shell had leased all the land they could buy or lease, largely, may I say, up to Cherry Avenue. Now, this is just hearsay, but I'm going to tell you now, because I don't actually know for sure that it was sold, but from all appearances in the action that Shell took, I would have to guess that it's logical and true. It was known to some people, at least, and it's hearsay to me, that the Shell geologists recommended against their company doing much leasing beyond Cherry Avenue, west of Cherry Avenue. Maybe you've heard that before. But
I think it's in Shell's history that they say that was true.
Well, yeah, it was, because we go west of Cherry, and they do have a few wells just by Will and Cherry, just west of there a little ways, and south of Burnett, they had half a dozen, three or four little wells. But largely, they did ignore west of Cherry. But the people just following the trend, because it was a well-known anticline, and they had found the fault there, and knew then by that time there was oil north and south of the fault. So they just kept going northwest and southeast up to the water department property there, and city property and all, and and just begin to keep finding oil as they went west, they did find, northwest, they did find the zones, the relative same structures at somewhat deeper horizons. They were deeper than on top of the structure, which the top of the structure is about between 25th and Cherry and Walnut, right in there they claim the top of the structure. Because the Wilbur zone, the most shallow oil ever found, was about 2,500 feet. It's found there, and then you go further west and you don't, it fades out. So that's the top of the signal structure over there. But actually, there was more oil produced and found west of Cherry. Shell could have had, I'd say, 80 or 90% of the whole field have had a different attitude about it. That's just one of those things.